winner is Podcast. This is episode 36 of Insert Credit. I'm the fully recovered Alex Jaffe, and my favorite game I've never played is God Hand.
Whoa.
I am the well as usual Frank Cifaldi, and my favorite game I've never played is God Hand.
Oh man!
You go for it.
I am Tim Rogers. I am a paragon of health because I only eat almonds and spinach. And my favorite game that I've never played is probably Nier, because I played every other Cavia game and I deserve it. And I'm the one who made Cavia popular. Okay. every post on Insert Credit that was everybody loves Cavia as the tag that was written by me.
I'm the probably healthy who even knows Brandon Sheffield, and my favorite game that I've never played is Killer 7, let's say.
That game blows.
Oh, then I guess I'm in good.
You're blessed.
Good luck for me.
Okay. I liked it at the time. It might still be good, but it's
bad luck. Bad luck for me, not having played Nier.
So Tim,
my heir.
You did the best at the lightning round last time we podcasted.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So that means you earn the right to ask our inaugural question.
Well, for my inaugural question, I'm going to go ahead and talk for a couple of seconds here. Okay. I've been playing this game, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, right? Which is
MGRR.
MGRR, which is really dumb. I don't think Revengeance is a dumb title, because I understand that Revengeance is a real word. Revenge is just the word Revengeance popularly shortened. I understand that. I don't know if Hideo Kojima thought he was making up a new word or not. I tweeted last night that Metal Gear Rising feels like it was written by a 9-year-old. And I lost 20 Twitter followers. And I got like hundreds of tweets at me saying, you know, but it's good for games to be wacky. Games should be wacky and dumb and weird. And meanwhile, that's not what I meant. I didn't mean it was wacky. I meant it felt like it was written by a 9-year-old. Like Hideo Kojima said, here's the plot. There's a scene where a guy has a sword to a guy's neck and he's going to kill him. And there's a guy who doesn't want him to kill him. What do the guys say? And it's like, guy with sword, I'm going to kill him. And then guy who doesn't want the guy to die, no, don't do it. Right? That's what it feels like. There's no punch up. There's no punch in it. The plot is also terrible, but let's not get into that. It's completely different reasons. It's a whole other can of worms. So my question is, do you forgive games for being wacky? Do you forgive games for being wacky because they're video games? Do you ever feel like there's a game you've forgiven because it's wacky, and you're like, it's okay for it to be wacky. It's just a game. Why
Maybe
is that
when
the
I was
opinion?
A kid. I think when I was young, when I was a young person, that probably happened. Because I hadn't had very many experiences in my life yet. So I didn't know about stuff. So when I was confronted with things that I perceived as new, I was like, cool. But then I learned about the world, and then I realized that very few things are new, and most things have been done before. And then I stopped forgiving things for being... I stopped giving things extra points for being wacky and weird. Although, I don't know if I can say that with 100% confidence, because I do give extra credit to stuff that tries hard.
Mm-hmm. That is stylishly virtuosic.
That's not necessarily wackiness. That's like, it's like we're attempting to have a style here, and I can respect that sort of thing.
I think it's the same genre of excuse. Metal Gear Rising, I was telling Frank and Jaffe before we started that I've never seen a game that is like this graphically, stylistically confident. Like it's crazy how much stuff is going on during the cutscenes. Like it just, it looks kind of amazing. So it blows my mind, and I'm like, I really appreciate the gesture going on here, but again, the dialogue has no punch.
So my answer to your question, I guess, would be that I reject games that appear to be trying to be wacky. And I love games that are serious about themselves but happen to be wacky because the author didn't know any better. And I'd say that's true of any form of entertainment for me.
Now, see, on the other side of this question there is, what are games with good dialogue? Are there games that have punchy dialogue at all? I think Portal does.
I've thought about this a lot, yeah.
Anything by Tim Schafer does, but
yeah.
I think Left 4 Dead is not bad.
Yeah, that's...
it's pretty good, yeah.
That's Valve as well. So
it's also Valve. It's really hard. The Last Express
had a good script too, by the way.
Yeah, it's hard to think of really good dialogue, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I often have to write dialogue for video games, and every time I write it the first time through, it's hard because sometimes you have to get information across. If you're not making a story game specifically, you have to get information across with what you're saying. And so it kind of necessarily comes from a stilted angle because it's partially informational, which is pretty... it's limiting. So the first pass of everything that I write winds up being stupid, and then I do it again and I make it a little better, but then I speak it out loud and I'm like, well, that's awful. No one would ever say this. And then I have to do it like 5 more times, and then I come up with something that, like, maybe a 9-year-old would have written, and that's about where I stop because it's good enough. No, it's not true, but it's hard. It's really hard to do.
So what you're saying is 9-year-olds write the way we speak.
That's right.
That's pretty good. Anyway,
that's not a bad deal.
Yeah.
But I guess. I was going to say something, but now it's like, who knows?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. sorry, I was typing something. God darn it. Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah,
just type some more stuff. Yeah, have your own private conversation while we're doing this podcast. That's
this not is the Insert Credit Podcast.
Hey, whoa, I was about to say my thing.
Okay,
go ahead. I had to write a tutorial for a puzzle game today, my own puzzle game, and I think I did a pretty good job of communicating exactly the manner in which the game is played without it sounding really dumb. It doesn't sound dumb. Like you can fit a couple eyedroppers of cleverness into something without it sounding like too clever. And yeah. I've also been watching the show 30 Rock, where the characters act like 9-year-olds, but the script is just so thoroughly punched that it's got just jokes and stuff, one-liners just kind of popping all over the place. And it's not like The Simpsons where, as I was telling Frank and Jaffe before the podcast, the last episode of The Simpsons I watched was like 5 years ago, and within the first 20 seconds they show a guy kicking a leprechaun for like no reason, because let's show a guy kicking a leprechaun. It's like, you can talk about this at your office, workplace, building tomorrow morning or afternoon, right? And it's like, but in 30 Rock, it's all contextual and it's all related to the subject and everything kind of pops along. It's like, why can't we have games that are punched like that? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a funny game. It can be an action game.
I agree with that. It's easier to do that when you are the owner of that product.
Yeah.
And like some of the games that I've had to write, I'm coming in late to the project. Like, everything's mostly done, and I'm just writing... I'm writing around what the existing framework, and I don't necessarily know how all this stuff actually goes. And I think that's how a lot of this stuff happens, which is unfortunate.
So final thought for me on that subject is that a lot of the reason that LucasArts employees, you know, from the old days have said the dialogue was so punchy and good is because they could iterate until basically the night they had to go gold. They could just go in and edit that text.
Oh, cool.
You know, they didn't have to worry about, voice acting or anything like that. They could just keep iterating until it was right. So there might be something there.
There is a little tiny something there. Yes, there's definitely something there. But this is still something you could... You can have a couple guys sit down at a reasonably sized table for a couple of hours, less than 8 hours, and they could come up with a plan to future-proof punchy dialogue in their games.
All right. Here's how the rest of this show is going to work. I'm going to throw a topic at you. You guys are going to discuss it until I sound this sound effect over here, and then we're going to keep going on to the next one, repeat that until we get to the lightning round, do it all again next week. What do you think? Sound like a good idea?
That sounds like a great time, Jaffe.
I hate it.
Well,
I hate
too
it,
bad,
I don't
Brendan.
Do it anymore.
This train has left the station. Here we go.
Train sucks.
My friend Mark recently selected some very tasteful video game tracks for the band to perform at his wedding, including pieces from Blue Dragon, Lost Odyssey, and Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. Went off
FFCC.
Quite well. But what would you have contributed to the track list?
Wait, is this for a wedding?
Yeah.
Oh. I would not have any video game music at my wedding.
I agree with Brandon.
I mean, it's nothing against video games. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, I guess, first of all, I don't think I want to get married. But second of all,
heck yeah, bro.
Fist bump. But,
dude. nuclear fist bump, bro.
That's right. But, you know, I mean, I guess you could have some lull times with, like, that Super Mario Galaxy 2 track that Koji Kondo
did the one that I keep linking. I was about to say I know what I want for my honeymoon. I actually have a playlist on my youtube.com/108x, which is music to listen to while having sex. So it includes Super Mario Galaxy, Yoshi Star Galaxy music. It includes Legend of Zelda Item Shop. Legend of Zelda, like Ocarina of Time item shop, that choom 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 choom.
Sarah, I'm going to stop you right there before we get angry emails. That is Saria's song. The item shop is something else.
No, it's played in some shops and houses. Like, it seriously is played in. It is in some shops and houses. It definitely is. I know. I have it burned into my brain. I have the image of a house with that music, kind of just chewing
along. Let's have
our
listeners decide.
But it also is an ocarina melody that you get later. The choom 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 choom. Is that
that's
the
Saria's song? Yes.
Yeah. That is one. But there is
the shop theme is choom 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 choom.
Oh, that's the shop theme. Yeah. But
yeah, there you go. Different song.
But there's I'm saying it's okay. It's played in houses. There, it,
no,
like,
that's choom 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 choom.
I would
backwards and forwards.
I would bone along
the Ocarina of Time theme song.
They play the choom choom choom. They play that song sometimes in the game inside houses. Period. Anyway,
I agree. Like if it's a wacky character or something, you tend to hit that song.
It's like wacky character sound. It's in my list. So yeah.
So my answer to this question is also, like Brandon, I would play no video game music at my wedding because from my perspective, the wedding music is not for me to enjoy. It's for my guests to dance to, and my guests are not going
to
go dance to video game music. That's just absurd. Come on. They're going to dance to crap that they know that I probably hate. And I'm fine.
I do not want dancing.
Frank, don't have crap that you hate at your wedding. That's not the way.
I'm going to have to steer this in a different direction because this was actually music they played during the ceremony.
Oh, that's even worse.
Ceremony. Whoa! That's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
There's got to be some way to be kind of, what do you call it?
Look,
yeah,
I'm
respectful about that.
I want to exchange my vows while the Earthbound shop music is playing. that's all I want out of a marriage.
Okay, I want to exchange my vows while I've got or everyone's walking down the aisle and such to the Tasmania Game Gear soundtrack. That's just
why
all
does
the,
that have to come up every
all
time?
All
the
playing.
It's amazing. The mystery of that soundtrack, like that's video game's greatest mystery. That's why
I want to find the guy who did it.
He was a producer or a programmer on it, something like that, and he could not remember how it came about at all. He had no recollection.
It's like programmer placeholder music. It's amazing.
Yeah.
There's such a thing as programmer art.
Programmer art.
But this is the first time I've heard programmer music.
Maybe it was algorithmically created somehow.
Like it's just like reading from RAM or something.
Yeah. So that's what that's my final answer. That's what I would play at my wedding.
Oh, I'm good with that final answer. Let's just end this there.
Sure.
Go ahead.
What do you think, Tim?
I don't know. I was going to try to be serious about it, but it's just right. So god darn hard. So it's so hard to reconcile my own man boy hang-ups about marriage with my own boy man hang-ups about religious sanctimony of ceremony. Yeah. And my own he-jerk, massive, aggressive idiocy regarding hatred of video games. It's hard to reconcile those three things into one perfect equilateral triangle.
I should probably mention that this was an Orthodox Jewish wedding.
Oh, that heats the situation up even hotter.
Yeah.
So it's like I just don't know.
Just like the Power Ranger wedding.
Sure.
That wedding that you showed us, Jaffe.
Yes, yeah. I am exactly aware of the Power Rangers wedding you're referring to.
Excellent.
All right.
Okay, Tasmania. Fantastic.
Let's move on,
answer.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Man, I wanted to
leave Tasmania.
Yeah, Blarg.
Sure, let's can do that later.
Blunk.
Who is the best narrator in a video game?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm glad that you asked.
Because
I don't know. I want to hear an answer.
Well, I guess... GLaDOS is a pretty good narrator.
Yeah. I like what they were going for with Bastion a lot. That's an obvious answer.
I mean, I didn't like what they said.
I didn't
said.
Like it, but I liked the idea of it. I liked the idea of a narrator that responded to your actions like that, but that's not really a great narrator.
Have you guys played the War of the Worlds game for Xbox Live Arcade? They've got Patrick Stewart narrating as you play.
Patrick Stewart.
That's pretty cool.
You guys managed to bring up the three narrators I had in mind in 38 seconds.
Well, that's good.
One.
Yeah.
I win.
I think probably the best narrator is you, the player. That sounds really stupid, but I think it's actually fact. because it is 100% true that the best narrative in a game is the one that is created by what you're doing when you play it and when you talk about that to your friends, that is the best narration that a game can have.
Heck yeah.
Yep. Unfortunately, I think that's true. But that's probably not the answer that we're trying to go for.
I think GLaDOS is my favorite answer so far. She's not, you know, cast in the role of the narrator, but she is narrating the story as it happens.
Yes. Yeah. Certainly in the first portal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's kind of explaining stuff as it's going on, sort of.
Yeah, and it's done, like I said, in a clever way, where like she's a character in the game, but she's also narrating everything you need to say, and not in an annoying exposition way either. It's actually really smart writing, now that I think about it.
I'm trying to think of any like text narrators that I've enjoyed reading through. I'm having a little bit of a hard time thinking of any.
Hitchhiker game was pretty funny.
I didn't play that, but it's probably not true.
It's just, I mean, yeah, if it's just Douglas Adams writing. I mean, it's funny.
Yeah.
But we've established that I like him, and no one else on this panel does.
Yeah, I don't.
Sure. I liked him, but I don't consider it good video game narration. It's just like a direct adaptation of the book's voice. It's not, you know, it's not narrating in a way that makes me feel like I'm a part
sure.
of it.
Makes sense. Yeah.
This is a hard question to answer because on account of how it, you know, that whole thing about 9-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no, it's not, yeah, not punchy.
So
to that point, how about the Ponycorn Adventure?
Oh, game? That's pretty good.
Because that game is actually narrated by like a 6-year-old and thus is completely appropriate.
Right.
Yeah. I remember liking the narration of like Western computer RPGs in general in their day, like like the BioWare stuff, where, you know, when you did something, it would say in text in third person what happened because they didn't, you know, draw it out necessarily.
Oh, for a second when you said Western computer RPG, my mind went to Oregon Trail.
No, I'm talking about like Baldur's Gate and Fallout.
Oh, I thought like the literal like frontier Wild West.
Like the
Wild Arms.
The third person narration of those games was pretty good and above most, but it's like but they didn't stand out. It's just like for a video game they were pretty good at doing that.
I'll tell you what I like though, it doesn't really totally count as narration, is I was playing some Chaos Gear, aka Soldiers of Fortune, and they got some British tough sounding dude to announce everything that happens, and so he says, "Special power, exit open," and it's really cool, and it sounds neat, and it makes you feel like you're like a tough dude going around in this wasteland with other tough dudes that are trying to murder you, and that's kind of cool. It gets the right vibe going.
I think the best narrator in the video games is in the game Ziggurat, where it just the game over screen is a sentence of text that who is delivering the text. I nobody ever asked that question, because if you're the last person on Earth and you die, it says before dying you managed to kill 200 of the alien freaks who killed everybody else. Who's narrating that?
Right.
Whoa!
It's the Lord of the Worlds.
Also, to be sort of serious, I think the game over screen of Demon's Souls and Dark Souls kind of qualifies as narration, because it just says "you died" really big on the screen, and it's like that's the only talking at you the game does, is to tell you that you died.
You died,
and it's like I think that's kind of cool.
I cheated a little bit and looked at our live comments, and someone suggested Gary Owens from Space Quest 4 and 5, which is a pretty good suggestion, actually.
I guess that's a hot and sweet one. DJ Professor K from Jet Set Radio.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty good.
Now, let me take this last minute.
Why do you say no, Brandon?
Right.
Because he sounds dumb.
Let me take this last 30 seconds.
He does sound like he was written by a 9-year-old.
Right. Yeah.
Let me ask you guys in this 15 seconds.
Ask it.
Who would you most like to narrate a video game?
Me.
Patrick Stewart.
Gary
Sean
Owens.
Connery.
Orson Welles. Orson Welles.
Orson Welles, there it is.
Period. Yeah, that's it. Then we will finally have the Citizen Kane of games.
Yeah. If it's narrated by Orson Welles. Great. Right under the buzzer. Let's move on.
Okay.
What is the mark of a video game which lends itself best to fan fiction?
It's the mark
Sega.
Of it is
Sega.
A poop stain in underwear is what I was going to say.
I think the mark is Sega. Sure.
The mark is Sega?
Yeah.
No, come on, man. Squeenix?
Yeah.
Come on, what about Squeenix?
Yeah. It is Squeenix, but they don't have a really marky mark.
Yeah.
Or a funky.
The mark of a game that lends itself to fan fiction is it feels like it was already written by a 9-year-old. So when a bunch of 9-year-olds think, I can do this, maybe I can even do it better.
If
and the thing is, in the realm, it is within the realm of the possibility that one 9-year-old is a little smarter than another, right?
Listen, Brandon, I'm on fanfiction.net right now.
Yeah,
Sonic the Hedgehog is number 4 in the most popular video games with fans.
Oh, right, we talked about this.
Right.
So, yeah.
My answer is Bromance. Bromance is a good character.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
Something that inspires fanfiction, because it's like, well, I want them to have sex with each other.
Any sort of love triangle or a plane of any sort.
Any game where you have characters that could have sex but don't do it in front of you on the screen, people will make them, they need to make them have sex.
Sterile celibacy, but a large cast and sterile celibacy is the mark of something that will be fan fiction, where it's like the writer does not touch the subject of intercourse or romance, but there are so many characters and their personalities are paint by number. This guy's a little bit angry. This guy's the funny guy. This girl is dark and has a tragic past. And, you know, it's like when and then they're all together, but they never touch each other. You know, it used to be with CG, it was really hard to make models kind of intertwine. So, you know, that's why
the
old Final Fantasy
games here, and that applies to all of them.
Does it?
That's not surprising.
Yeah.
See, there you go. Now, Sonic the Hedgehog is a bit of an oddity because you got to be a little bit weird, like, fundamentally, to kind of want to see those characters have sex.
It's true.
Sure.
That's like wanting to see Felix the Cat blow Mickey Mouse or something.
Right.
Or it's like wanting to watch two dogs have intercourse instead of watching human pornography.
Yeah. Or, you know, you can't watch human pornography unless the people are wearing cat ears. Nothing crazy, just cat ears.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You know?
Not like motionless cat heads.
That doesn't do anything for me. Yeah. You have to be a little bit weird to want to see Goofy jerk off Donald Duck, right?
Yeah.
You have to be...
That's... That's not mainstream behavior.
If you want to see Bugs Bunny jerking off Daffy Duck, that's
I've got this
well.
Kickstarter.
Great.
I don't want to see the cartoon animals really touching up on one another's stuff at all.
Well, you've got no choice, every famous animator who's still alive, they're on this project. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, are we going to get to see the Roadrunner ram his head up inside Wile E. Coyote?
Oh, you don't even want to know what those two are going to do. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be the greatest movie ever filmed.
Yay.
Is he going to? Is the Roadrunner going?
Yeah.
Is the Roadrunner going to beak the coyote?
It's going to bring a whole new meaning to painted tunnel.
So, yes, yeah, so fan fiction doesn't all have to be sexual.
Yes, it does.
a lot of it is, but I mean, but again, you know, the sterile celibacy kind of you want to see some sort of not romance, but like you're looking at the game, you're taking in the story, and you're just thinking, there's a whole like large significant fraction of the human emotional spectrum that these people don't experience during the course of this narrative. I want to complement this somehow.
Well, yeah, if you leave any kind of room for, if there are things that you didn't address that seem like they might have been or should have been, or if you leave things open-ended even, like it's the, you know, it's ambiguous who did this thing or that thing in this game, then people are going to want to fill in the gaps because it breaks their brains if those gaps are not filled.
That might be why Mass Effect is so high on the list, because there was all that controversy about the endings and such.
Yep. Also, but that one's, I think, a slightly different case, because you can make characters have sex in that, and that may have inspired people in a different way to do that, because they're like, here's one where we can do it. So now I know what that's all about, and I can make it happen.
Now I know what sex is, kind of.
Yeah, now I've learned.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Pro tip, kids, it's actually not that cool.
No?
For some people.
Nah. It's kind of boring. Don't bother with it, Jeffy.
I won't. I'll take your advice.
TBWI.
Hey, who wants to go to the improv zone?
Ow.
Nobody? Okay, let's move on.
Whatever, really?
Yeah.
You're just going to skip it?
Yeah, let's just skip it. If you're not into it, we're not going to do it.
Just bring it up later and don't tell us about
it. Bring it up later. Fine.
Just don't confront us with it beforehand.
Let's go to our listener contributed question.
Listeners,
I'll take one of those.
Yeah, Daniel R. asks, what video game ad campaign do you personally find the most offensive?
All of them. Just trying to sell video games to people. What's the deal with that?
It's a tough question.
There was one with the Shadow Man, you know, with the putting ad on a tombstone. That was when Acclaim was doing nuts stuff.
Yeah.
That was actually kind of cool, though.
They had the one where they'd give you money if you named your baby Turok.
Yeah.
But that's not disgusting. That's just like stupid.
The baby
disgusting
the baby
would
part
be like the recent Square Enix crap has been the disgusting.
With the Hitman and such, like.
Yeah, like, well, especially like we had those really two awful Hitman things. We had the, you know, the trailer with the sexy nun babes.
Yeah, garroting a bunch of nuns.
Yeah, and then we had the Facebook like murder your friends because their boobs are too small game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was what was the deal with that?
They're British. You know, we're just taking the piss out of you. You know?
We're British, right? Oh yeah.
Here we do it over here.
Yeah. All right, here it comes. We're going to give you a little bit of something to get upset about.
A zinger.
Is that it, really?
Yeah, that's it.
You can't get worse than him.
The Dead Island thing. The Dead Island thing.
Yeah.
That was the eviscerated, blood-soaked female bikini torso with no
head.
Yeah,
that was a bit pretty dumb. That was another instance of marketing dudes being like, what about this? People like boobs and zombies. And then it happened, they're like, people are mad, I don't understand. It's just like there's a fundamental lack of understanding.
Well, it's just like the ad for Shadow Man on a tombstone. Who's going to be walking around a graveyard thinking about what video game to buy next? Nobody. The whole purpose of putting a video game ad on a tombstone was so they could tell journalists about it and then get a couple of photos, and then that becomes – it was proto-blogging is what it was. It was blogging before blogging. It was magazine blogging. It was like you're sitting down building up your marketing strategy going, what are people going to blog about? Except back then it was what can we get – what's nuts enough to get people to talk about in a magazine? I feel like that Dead Island Torso thing, they had to have some inclination that, you know, some inclination, that's not what I meant. They had to have some idea that somebody was going to see it and freak out, and a bunch of people were going to freak out. And just like, let's do it anyway, because people sure will be talking about the game. Like, that's, everybody knows that's how marketing goes. And it offends me that that still works in principle.
Yeah. I mean, we've had this discussion before that I think that, you know, that's starting to bite people in the behind more than it was in the past. Where
bad publicity has been sort of invented.
Yeah, bad publicity has been invented by marketers. Mm-hmm. Like, there is stuff that will now only turn people off to a product. And because, like in the case of, let's say, Resident Evil 6, I mean, wait, what's the new one? 6, yeah.
6, uh-huh. Yeah, 6, the one with the giraffe getting blown by the guy. Yeah.
In the case of Resident Evil 6, you give it to Funny Man Conan O'Brien before the release of the game, and he tears it apart with actual kind of insightful comments. It's like people that knew about Resident Evil 6 were going to buy it already.
Heck yeah. All
of those people that are watching Conan O'Brien's show that didn't care about video games just saw a lol stupid video game. So like all you get out of that is a bunch of people that already thought video games were stupid still thinking they're stupid, and people that thought maybe this game was going to be good thinking maybe the game's not going to be good.
Right.
That's all you get.
So I think that I mean, I'm hypersensitive to advertising and marketing in general because it's a field that I have worked in professionally. But like I saw an ad just the other day on a website for the new SimCity game, and the slogan was "With great power ... comes great irresponsibility," because in the game you can make a tornado happen if you feel like it, right? That offends me because it's like, isn't the game about building a city? Right?
Yeah.
Like, why do you want to promote the idea that that's like Grand Theft Auto, have some fun, kill some hookers, right?
Right.
Like, they don't say that in the advertisement.
No.
You kill a hooker because it's your choice as a twisted individual. And worse than that, they're ripping off what, the first Spider-Man movie?
Yeah.
Obviously,
right.
The phrase "with great power comes great responsibility" was something that someone's kindergarten educated uncle had said before the movie Spider-Man.
Right.
But it was the movie Spider-Man that thrust that phrase, which isn't even a phrase, that half-baked wisdom into the whatever sort of limelight it is in. But it's like with great power comes great responsibility, duh, right?
Yeah.
I mean, duh, a nuclear missile. That's, you know, you got a lot of responsibility with a nuclear missile. I don't like that sort of – just everything about marketing offends me and bothers me and makes me kind of wish something was dead.
I think it's kind of the image macroization of everything. Like you want people to understand something as quickly as possible, so you have a punchy lull times phrase that you can associate with your product in a really quick manner that then you can hope will go viral. Or
that
whatever.
Is not new, though. That
no, it's not new. It's not new, but it's not new at all. But I think that with
it
the
is
kind
coagulating
of...
towards that. That's a terrible sound. I don't like that.
I don't like it either.
Just use the Google again. Effects gong. That's what we did last week.
Yeah, the gong is good.
That was the Burger Time death noise.
Yeah, that is a pretty good sound, but
I didn't like it.
Okay,
here's the Google. Alex Jaffe has added Google effects.
No, all
right. Next question.
Next question. What's the best level in a Mario game?
It's the best level in a Mario game?
Yeah.
Holy Lord. Do you have like 6 hours to press
the... the ship level from Bonk's Revenge.
I was about to say we should have Brandon first say what his favorite level from Bonk's Revenge is.
Shit, what is it from Bonk's Revenge?
Yeah.
Did you see the first one?
The fist, the ship level,
Oh, where you're on a boat.
Yeah, okay, on a boat. Yeah, yeah.
I always wondered how they got that boat, but I guess it was the dinosaurs were the dominant species at that point, so of course they had boats, right?
Yeah, the dinosaurs built that boat.
Yeah, and also you can fly by just bonking your head in the air.
That's right.
I'm just going to shut up and kind of defer to Tim on this for a while.
Best Mario level. Man, I don't know. I haven't played enough Mario to know about that.
There's so many good Mario levels.
Oh, I know what the best Mario level is. It's the one in Mario Brothers. The only level.
Yes.
The only level.
There's no long jumps
I think that level was in Joust also.
Yeah.
It was a little bit better than the level in Joust, actually.
A little bit.
Did Joust have POW blocks, Brandon?
Nope. Did it have two-player co-op? No.
No.
Did it have enemies you could hit from the bottom and then you had to hit them from the top after you hit them from the bottom?
No.
I mean, yeah, but
that doesn't have anything to do with... That has nothing to do with the level, per se.
No. It is good level design, though. I'll give it that.
Yes.
It is a pretty good... It's a good little one-screen level design. Just as Pac-Man is a good level... Pac-Man's a great level design.
I like the first level in Super Mario Bros. 2.
Yeah, because it's got a whole bunch of weirdness in it.
It's got just all kinds of freakouts. And so, just as
Which Super Mario Bros. 2 are we talking about here?
The American...
USA one.
Yeah.
The real one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, the real one. And it's showing, you know, Super Mario Bros. 1 was teaching you how to play a platforming game, and it did a good job of that. That's what Stage 1 of that game was doing. Stage 1 of this, Super Mario Bros. 2, is like, but what if we did this weird stuff? What if this thing happened?
It's teaching you to expect the unexpected. So it's kind of like action-adventure. More than a platformer.
Let's see. It starts with you like falling. It starts with you falling from a door that you can never open.
But everybody on the playground says if you press up really fast,
like, really
you can
fast,
the door.
Yeah,
and it takes you back to the title screen.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
I heard it takes you back to Super Mario Brothers 1.
Oh,
that's awesome! Yeah. Right at the princess.
No, hang on. It takes you back. If you read the manual, Mario is in a cave or something, and he finds that door and then falls in. So it takes you back to the cave. Okay.
It's Plato's cave. It's the. It takes you back to the Platonic ideal of what a Mario game should be.
But God, it introduces you to so much weird stuff. Like, oh, there's a potion. What happens if you throw it? There's a door. What happens if you go through the door? You're in a weird shadow.
And then you go into a door, and there's a vine.
There's even a part of that level where you like if you take a certain shortcut with the bombs and everything, you go over the mountain and you know into an area that you like a shortcut to the boss. Like
And there's also the fact that you know you're picking up turnips, so that's weird.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty weird. Yes.
But then if you're in this shadow place, the turnips turn into coins. Like what is the significance of that? What is that supposed to mean?
Right.
What is this place where vegetables become gold? Is it about commerce? Is it a critique of commerce?
I don't think it's a critique of anything.
No, it's not.
It's pop art, and that's great because every game now has to actually be a critique of something. So I'm going to go ahead and say that while that's a good point, I like... The jet fleet level from World 8 of Super Mario Bros. 3.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds of jets coming at you, and it's really fast, and you're jumping off little platforms in the sky. Like that.
Can you clarify for me that that's the one where there are all the ships, right? All the brown ships, and they're shooting the what you call it, the bullet guys. What are those guys
called?
Bullet bills.
Okay, and, I liked that, too.
And cannonballs. I like that level, but I also like... level 3-8 from Super Mario Bros. 3, which is the one with the green hills that only show up in that level. There's like green plateaus, and there's the enemies that spit the maces at you, the spiked balls. They throw them. And then there's a lot of vines, and there's a couple of secret things. Like that is a level that feels really good because you can also kind of turbo through it.
Attempting to cheat right now by looking for my Mario Mania book, but I think it's in the room.
Oh, man.
A level that I don't like is the level, I think this is also Super Mario Bros. 2, that has the cactus guys. What is it, Cactor or something?
That would be the Pokies.
Pokies.
I don't like the dang Pokies and the sand that you fall down into. It's such a slow and plodding experience. I don't like that part.
It's a bit of a slog.
Yeah.
So I guess the airship level is a that airship level is auto scroll. So maybe that doesn't have the Mario. When I think Mario, I think running really fast and jumping a whole lot. So
yeah, but this like refines that though. Like the running really fast, like you don't have an option. You are running really fast.
It's like the cover based shooter of Mario levels. Because no, I mean when I play it, I can get about 3/4 across the screen, and then I've got to wait a couple of seconds to make the next jump.
Totally.
I would say that auto scrolling is kind of
not Mario.
I don't want to say cheap, but it's not like something that I would choose for my best level design, because best level design would inspire you to go forward rather than force you.
In my opinion. There's a lot of I like the thoughtful jumping in that level. There's a lot stop, turn around, run a little bit, jump, and it's
cool. It's cool. I just wouldn't say that it gets to be the best.
So I think the answer is Worlds 5 through 7 of Super Mario Brothers 3.
That's not a level.
No, that's not one level.
I'm sticking with my answer. My answer remains my answer.
Mario Brothers 3. And,
Bong.
Yeah, I'm right.
Better, guys? Gong.
Yes. But World 3-8, seriously.
Okay. Honk. Who would win in a fight? Raiden for Metal Gear or Raiden for Mortal Kombat?
Oh, nice. Well, I just played a whole bunch of that Metal Gear Rising, and I can tell you that guy's nuts. In the first 10 minutes, he jumps across missiles. Like not just like in the Contra fashion of jumping across a couple of missiles. He jumps across like 600 missiles in like 3 seconds. Sure. He runs up and down an exploding building. He cuts a giant robot in half. I don't think Raiden from Mortal Kombat could beat him at all.
Raiden is a god, so I think that's the end of that discussion.
He is a god, but he assumes human form for the Mortal Kombat tournaments, and I'm assuming that he's within that form for this fight.
He could do whatever he wants. He gets killed in the movie, and he comes back and stuff. Doesn't that happen? I don't know.
For your consultation, I have dropped a list of Raiden's fatalities in the private chat.
Okay, well, he's a god, and I'm going with that. Also, He's got a fun little dumb hat. He shoots electricity out of his hands, and
he can warp. He can warp wherever he wants.
That's true.
The podcast slowing down.
That's just you, Tim.
It's just you, actually. He's also the inspiration, I'm pretty sure, for one of the bad dudes in Big Trouble in Little China, which is the best.
Oh, man.
So I think that Raiden from Mortal Kombat.
No,
that's my favorite amount of trouble in proportion to the size of a country.
Yeah.
Tim, do you have something?
You had something? No? Tim. Oh, man. I think Tim's
dead. Big Trouble in China. I just had a whole bunch of weird problems where the internet was really slow for about 2 minutes, and everybody was talking like they were drunk.
Nope,
can you guys not hear me now?
Yeah,
we can hear you now.
What the heck, man?
He's just talking because he can't hear us. Now he's gone. Anyway, so since Tim is gone, that leaves Raiden from Mortal Kombat uncontested.
I think it's Raiden from Mortal Kombat. He is a god.
Well, I'd move on to the next topic, but Tim's not here, and I don't want to do that without him.
All right, so I'm going to tell you why Big Trouble in Little China is one of the best movies ever.
Okay.
because you got your Kurt Russell, and he's playing like a hapless dude who's supposed to be real tough, but actually his friends are way tougher. And but then he's a really good guy who will always try to help, even though he kind of sucks at it. Comes through in the last moment, but also it's just got all this crazy 90s neon and it talks about dragons living under the streets of San Francisco, which is one of the only things I like about that place, which is that they've got dragons underneath. And
San Fran sucks, so.
That's right.
So Tim, you last left, Raiden from Metal Gear was unchampioned.
Well, yeah, because as you said, Raiden from Mortal Kombat has assumed human form. He like that was has. Part of his. I have read the instruction manual, guys.
Yeah.
Okay. I was 14 years old when that game came out. Of course, I read the instruction manual. And it says that he has assumed human form as part of his rivalry with Shang Tsung. Like he has put his own continued existence on the line. If he dies in the tournament, he dies for real. Like,
yeah, but that's
if Shang Tsung is not involved here, then he's a god.
That means that means nothing though.
Okay, Jaffe, for the purpose of this contest, has Raiden sworn himself to use just his fighting skills? Yes.
For the purposes of this fight, Raiden from Metal Gear has joined the Mortal Kombat tournament.
So what I'm going to say is that...
And is it Raiden from Metal Gear Revengeance or Metal Gear Solid 2 or what?
Your favorite iteration of Raiden.
It would have to be... Okay, first of all, Revengeance Raiden and Metal Gear Solid 4 Raiden, that's two... Ninja Raidens, and there's only one other Raiden, so like we have to go with a Ninja Raiden because that's two out of three.
Sure.
And he, in the 20 years since Mortal Kombat came out, just electronic interactive entertainment has evolved, and we are able to give 14-year-olds more of what they want.
Yes.
Like, so Raiden is the stuff that I saw in the first 2 hours of this Metal Gear Rising Revengeance blew my mind. The violence that he perpetrates on things and people, and there's no way that Raiden, the Thunder God, who sweeps and then uppercuts a guy just like everybody else in Mortal Kombat, there's no way he could compete with that.
Right.
He can turn you into an electric puddle of goo. He can do all kinds of fatalities to you. I don't know. I don't buy it.
Raiden can do his little thing where he flies with his hands forward like this.
Yeah. Yeah. The other Raiden can't do that.
No, you can't do that.
Raiden can run at like you run like 90 miles per hour in this game. He doesn't have to do
like
this.
God Raiden can teleport there before he runs.
Yeah,
that's
Raiden
right. He can teleport.
He does have teleportation ability.
I'm sticking with my answer.
It's not good enough. This guy's nuts. This guy in this Metal Gear game. This guy's god darn insane.
We talk a lot about Metal Gear in this podcast, and
sure do.
I still haven't really played it, and I don't ever intend to.
Play the first one.
I'm just going to put that out there.
Right. Just play the first one if you feel like playing one of them.
Actually, you know what should play? What you should actually play, Brandon, is Metal Gear 2.
Metal Gear 2 for the old Nintendo.
Is that going to
no,
get
No, 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 not the Nintendo one. The MSX one.
Yeah, well, it's but you can get it ROMs for it. Yeah,
I ain't got no MSX.
Or you can borrow Metal Gear Solid 3, the special edition. It's on disc 2. You can play it on your PlayStation 2.
All right. Also, okay. Metal Gear Solid 3 is pretty good.
Speaking of franchises we've never played, that brings up my next topic. I've never played a Tomb Raider game. Is there any reason to start now?
Well,
sure.
Not yet, because they haven't brought Tom Brader into the game yet.
Yeah,
he hasn't gotten in there.
I would say play the first Tomb Raider. The first Tomb Raider is actually pretty good.
Yeah?
I think it's pretty good. Play the first... you could play the first real 360 one. That was kind of fun. I mean, the thing that's sort of fun about the new Tomb Raiders is it's sort of the way... In a way, it's kind of similar to how some of the Uncharted things are fun, where you can... be in a kind of a boring cave and then all of a sudden, holy crap, there's a secret civilization that lived down here and built this awesome thing. That's kind of fun. And then you can get on top of that awesome thing, like some statue thing, and take a jewel from it.
I would say a little Indiana Jones-ish. I would say go ahead and play the first one, because the first one on the PlayStation, because it's constructed out of levels, and the levels are enormous, and the levels will take you like an hour or 2 hours to finish, and it's all just meticulous jumping, looking around, seeing where you can jump, whereas in Uncharted and newer games, it's just you're hanging on a ledge, press left on the analog stick, does your guy's hand move? If yes, press the jump button. If no, press another direction. Does your guy's hand move? If yes, press the jump button. Whereas in the old Tomb Raiders, it's actually rewarding about environmental and spatial awareness. You're looking around, you're climbing stuff, you're pulling levers, you're flooding chambers, and there's even the training tutorial mode just is Lara Croft's giant mansion. where you just walk around the mansion and jump and hang on stuff. And the story's really, you know, thin and tenuous. You're just looking for artifacts, but it has this huge atmosphere, and it's like new games don't ever.
I've never played it, but it sounds to me like an adventure version of Super Mario 64.
It is somewhat a lot like that. It's a little bit more like a Zelda.
With like, a way jankier camera.
Yeah, it has. The camera's not great. Well, you control tank controls, so the camera's always directly behind your back. Unless you're close to a wall, then things start to clip and twitch and get weird. But it's solidly playable, and there's weird platforming in it. There's like platforming where you've got to kind of think way differently than you've had to for most other stuff that involves jumping.
The new one is worth playing if you can recreate the video card settings of that giant bomb playthrough that I linked on Twitter a little bit ago, where everything became horrifying, and they, you know, that like all the textures, especially fire and stuff, were just turning into flickering boxes, and Lara Croft's shirt was like a series of ones and zeros and stuff. It was super great looking, and I would love to play through that game that way, but that's not going to happen.
I would just say play the original PlayStation 1 and appreciate its legitimately endearing, low polygon, low texture, very just... It's a goddarn level design, the video game, in a way that no games are now, because they're all blockbuster entertainment experiences where you're shooting dudes in the face. And you're not shooting any dudes in the face in this game. They don't give you dudes to shoot in the face. It's compelling, medium term, short term, immediate term, long term, with just the environment. And to me, that's still remarkable in video games. And all anyone ever wants to talk about is how big her boobs were, and people keep calling her Laura when it's clearly Lara. I mean,
yep.
Is it Lara or Lara?
It's whatever one you want, but it's not Laura. Everyone says Laura, and it blows my mind. I saw the movie, and it's Lara.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Lara.
Now that I think about it. The movies are hilarious, by the way.
Yeah.
I think that game is neat level design-wise, but it's not that fun to move around in that space because of how... I mean, it's nice that it controls so precisely, but yeah, the tanky turning is pretty tough. And it's just because, I mean, it was before dual analog sticks, right?
Oh, heck yeah. D-pad only.
Sort of why they had to go with that
Zelda Ocarina of Time took Tomb Raider's, like, spatial exuberance and gave it, like, simplified controls where you just pull up. You just, like, push against a block and he'll climb up, because what else are you grinding against the block for? Whereas in Tomb Raider, you have to press the two L1 and R1 shoulder buttons to reach her hands up and pull yourself up, which is kind of weird. It's kind of like it's very stick shifty, like in terms of movement, because like in order to jump, you have to press the jump button while running. So you're like running and you press the jump button toward the end of a platform, and then you have to press the shoulder buttons to grab on to something. So there's like a whole bunch of weird stuff. And once you pick up speed when you're running, it's kind of like a driving game. It's really weird. But
whereas in Ocarina of Time, that all happens automatically.
It's all automatic. You jump when you reach the end of a platform, because what kind of idiot's going to run off the edge of a platform? And,
exactly.
Me. Like,
whee! Yeah,
I definitely would, but...
Heck yeah.
Because I challenge the system whenever I can. What do you think about Tomb Raider, Frank?
I've never played a Tomb Raider either, so...
Really? I really hate when that kind of pushing against the system bites you in the behind and murders you, because... It's fun to do, but when you get killed by testing the boundaries and it pushes you back like several minutes, like 30 minutes to an hour, it's like, well, I guess that was not a reward for me.
Well, that blows.
Next topic.
Okay, sure.
Have kids, what rules or boundaries would you draw for their video game playing?
None of them. I would say no video games. I would say no video games, period. That's what I would say.
I would limit it.
I would never have kids.
Right, there's that. But I would limit it in the same way I'd limit any other entertainment, which is, like, as long as all of your responsibilities have been taken care of, then do whatever you want. Right.
Yeah, I would probably do something similar if I had a kid, which I do not think I am going to. But I think I would certainly let them play, you know, Minecraft over other types of games. You know, right. I'd prefer that they learn to read by reading books, but I could let them supplement that a bit with some Pokemans or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Pokemans teaches critical thinking. That's cool.
Yep. But,
and I guess I'm not thinking about content so much as just time playing video games. Content, yeah, I'd limit in some way, but I don't really even know how to define that.
No dumb games.
Right.
I would want them to play Call of Duty because I want them to grow up to want to protect their country.
That's right.
Right.
Well,
I mean, there's going to hit an age where you got to let them play whatever they want and not, you know, judge the content of it.
I think Gears of War is suitable for a 12-year-old. It's schlocky and it's gory, but it's in a cartoon sort of way. But it also... See, here's the thing. As an adult, I like playing stuff. Maybe I'm treating myself like a child. This is an unintentional psychotherapy session that this is turning into. Right. But I like playing games where I feel like I'm sort of learning something. And I feel like I sort of learned something in Gears of War because you're learning a little bit of critical thinking. It's like you've got to think about the space while you're moving through it. And you've got to plan the best way to get through it. I like games that make me feel like a cat burglar. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want a game about being a cat burglar. But
like Sly Cooper? That's a joke.
Yeah, that's actually a raccoon
burglar.
Yeah, so that's not a cat burglar. Thanks. Nice try, though. Yeah. Nice try.
Thanks for playing.
Wait, wasn't there a Catwoman video game?
Well, yeah, but it's probably a game about hidden dudes. I was going to say that...
Yeah, I think it was about hitting, yeah.
Hitman is basically a cat burglar game, except instead of burglaring, you're murdering.
Yeah, you're murdering.
He's a cat murderer.
Cat murderer. He's a cat murderer.
Cat murderer.
Because he's stealing the life.
Isn't Thief supposed to be one of them dang burglar games?
Yeah, it's a little burgly, but it's not burgly enough. I mean, the one game that got closest to what I feel like, because I like heist movies, you know. Mm-hmm. So the one game that got closest to the heist movie feeling was what's it called? The Legend of Zelda: The Phantom Hourglass, where there's this dungeon that you have to go into over and over again as you get new items, so you can like carve a deeper path through the level. You can get through the level more quickly. And that felt like sort of a learning experience.
A lot of roguelikes do that.
That's true, but none of them are Zelda games, where they have had 5 years of 5 years of full-time employees who are paid one-third of what they'd get paid in another country, working on the game.
Yeah,
just kind of sweatshopping out this high-quality piece of software.
Facts.
Yeah, that's a definite fact. I would let my kids play the Zelda games. I would be like, you should play these. And then I would, you know, just play the first... I would let them play Super Nintendo games.
Ocarina of Time was the only game I played with my dad. And he feels like he doesn't have to play another game after that.
That's not a bad assessment.
Yeah.
It is... I was talking with my friend Ian, who works at Luna Games in San Diego, which is a nice game store, I've heard.
San Diego, yeah.
It's really evident that parents do not quite understand that video games are different. Any video game is different from any other game.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, they might cost different prices or one might be better than another.
Right.
He was talking about trying to convince someone, a parent, that they should get Pokemon for their kid. And she's like, but he likes that Ben 10. He's like, but...
Right.
Pokemon is going to teach your kid some skills, and it's actually fun. He might enjoy it. And he's like, but it's, you know, it's to her, it's like, I got to buy a video game because the kid wants a video game, and so I'm going to buy the video game that looks like the thing that he likes, which is, it's amazing that that still works, but apparently, yeah, parents still don't understand that there is a difference in quality. It's not just like, I'm going to buy the new Barbie.
I guess Will Smith was right.
About what?
Parents just don't understand.
Oh yeah, they don't.
It took me a minute, but I got it. Yeah. I got
you
it. I got
the
there,
Fresh
Jeffy.
Prince. I would have gotten it. My friend Doug Jones lets his kids play games, but like for some reason they've kind of they have good taste in video games. Mm-hmm. He's got like a 9-year-old daughter who has like played all of the original Super Mario games and Zeldas and all that. That's kind of cool.
Just start him with. Start them off with a Genesis or a Super Nintendo or a TurboGrafx or something.
I think Super Nintendo, because that's got more games that are kind of cohesive experiences. You don't want them to grow up weird.
No, but I probably do. I want them to turn out like me, so they're probably going to have to play.
Why do you want them to turn out? So earlier in the podcast, you said you don't want to get married, and now you're saying that you want your hypothetical children to be just like you?
Yeah. Not just
Brandon,
like me, but
I'm going to go ahead and say... I'm not your goddamn psychiatrist, okay?
Uh-huh.
Is
that it?
You know,
okay.
That's it. All.
The thing is, if I did, I'd want to create... The only point of creating another human is to make one more like me. What other point is there to doing it?
Well, half like you.
Yeah, a bit like me.
Improv zone or lightning round? Your choice. Vote now.
Lightning round.
Oh, man.
Frank said lightning round.
That's my vote.
That's Frank's vote.
Other votes.
I'm going to go ahead and vote no confidence, so it's up to Brandon. I've placed it all on Brandon.
Ooh.
What? I don't know. I mean, lightning round's easier, so I like easy.
Man, okay. I guess
lightning round it is.
Easy.
You want to blame us for that after you made no vote?
You like it easy, so you don't want to get married. You want your hypothetical children to be mostly like you, and you like that you always pick the easy option. Sure.
Okay.
I'm going to murder you in your sleep later.
Yeah, and you're prone to homicidal rage.
Homicidal rage and fits of violence.
We're playing elevator pitches, guys.
Oh, I like pitching out in an elevator. Okay. It's a really small place to play baseball, though.
Yeah,
it's almost the same as improv. Let's just do improv, then.
Okay.
Now he's already spoiled that the next lightning round is elevator.
We're already up to elevator.
We've started.
Right, fine.
Each of you is going to take 1 minute to pitch your idea to an important person in the video game industry week. That person is famed game adaptation supervillain Uwe Boll.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Tim, you're going first.
Well, are we pitching a game or a movie?
An idea.
Okay.
I just want to say get Uwe Boll. I want you to make a movie out of Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. We only need about $15 because it's Halloween season and the Halloween store is open.
Right.
And that'll be enough. And then just let me write the script, and it'll be better than the game, because I'm not 9 years old anymore. And that's about it. That's all I've got. Okay. I think.
Frank, go.
Uwe, I'm barely aware of who you are, and I understand that you make movie adaptations that are really bad. And I don't know why we're in this elevator. It's kind of weird. Nice suit, by the way. I like that. Did you get that at the JCPenney? I shop there a lot. That's cool. So I was thinking, you do movie adaptations of video games. So kids are playing Minecraft a lot. So I was thinking we make a Minecraft movie. I've got these Legos, and I've got a camera. And I was thinking we just build some Legos and film it, and I'll narrate it, and it'll be $30 maybe, and then we'll all be millionaires again. And I think it'll be good.
Brandon, go.
All right, so Mr. Bull, I'm very aware of your work, and I know that the way that you make money is to make a film that will lose money because that way your costs are covered under tax breaks by German law. And so that means you need a property where people have heard of it, but if you screw it up, they're going to hate it, and they're probably just not really going to go anyway. So that's why I think you should make another Hitman movie, because Square Enix is desperate for cash. They will give away the license pretty cheap. People have heard of it, so they might go to the theaters. It will definitely be critically panned. And then you can make your money back. So that's my big shot. Also, I'll help you write it to make sure it's terrible.
Okay, great.
Also, you could also get that's an excuse to just have a big screen movie where nuns are getting like kind of strapped.
Yeah,
that's right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just kill.
That's pretty good.
2 hours of nun slashing. Yeah.
Just nuns being just nun. Just call it Hitman.
Nun. We'll call it nun slashing and cyberbullying.
I'm going to go ahead and say that, that Brandon...
Hitman Guns versus Nuns.
Yeah, because he had a whole bunch of time to think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Well, no, that was,
yeah,
that was my thought
yeah,
immediately.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give that one to Brandon.
If you started sure. with me, I would have said the same thing. Because I actually... I've read
you,
a lot
you're
about that.
You are familiar with the subject matter.
Yeah.
So, yep.
I didn't really try.
Congratulations, Brandon. You are the winner of this week's podcast. You get homework. So... Good job.
You get a,
no worries.
You get a Coke? What does he get? He
homework.
You get homework. As in, you have to come up with a question next week.
I'll do it.
Jaffe, can I get a Coke?
I want a Coke.
Sure, I can get you a Coke.
Thanks, Jaffe. I want a Coke.
Coca-Cola.
Do you have any preference if it's Coke Zero or caffeine-free?
Between the two, I go Coke Zero.
All right, fair enough. This has been the Insert Credit Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/ICPodcast.
Honk.
You can look us up on iTunes by searching Insert Credit. Leave us a nice review. Give us a rating. You can subscribe to our RSS at... Tim, what's that link that I sent you? You got it on hand?
It was insertcredit.com/media/insertcredit.xml.
That's the one. If you're not subscribed to that, you're subscribed to the wrong thing. So don't
TRT.
Come talking to me about how we haven't updated, because that is the real RSS. Anyway, stick around, because for the next 20 minutes, we'll be answering your questions. And if you missed out on the live show, then make sure you make it next week.
Before we do the outro completely,
sure.
We haven't done a reminder in a while of nominations for best games of all time. And what was the other one, best Genesis games?
Right. If you want to send your nominations for the best video game of all time or the best Genesis game of all time, send either the subject BGOAT for best game of all time, BGOAT, or BGGOAT, BigAGOAT, to podcast@insertcredit.com. You can also send your questions in over there. For if you want to write your own topics for the show, reread some of those. And you can tell us for an upcoming special for our one-year anniversary in a few months, what your favorite topics on the show were, so we can revisit them in the special Revengeance episode.
Yeah.
I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm
Tim Rogers.
I'm Brandon Sheffield all by myself.
And this is podcasting.
Podcast over, yeah!